Welcome back to the program. It's often said that the bonds of sisterhood are among the most powerful for women. In fact, they're often the most corrosive. When my guest Kelly Vallon's essay, My Sorority Pledge, I Swore Off Sisterhood, was published in the New York Times Modern Love column, she was overwhelmed by the sheer volume of response. This was not just about the so-called mean girls, but from women many of whom had been scarred or shaped in their lives by the pain inflicted by high school and college sisterhood. It is my pleasure to welcome Kelly Vallon here. She earned her J.D. from the University of California, Davis, where she was executive editor of the Law Review. Her writings have appeared in the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, and the San Francisco Chronicle. It is my pleasure to have her here to talk about her book, The Twisted Sisterhood, Unraveling the Dark Legacy of Female Friendships. Kelly Vallon, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. First of all, tell us a little bit about what you wrote about in the New York Times piece.
Sure. I had run into a sorority ghost one day back in the Bay Area, and it triggered a whole bunch of memories about an event that had occurred back in the 80s when I was in college. Very difficult evening where I was foolish enough to be drinking too much at a fraternity house, and there had been a date rape. And although the event involved obviously both men and women, my sorority sisters ultimately blamed me. I was kicked out of the house, and it was that event that really left me, you know, struggling to trust and feel comfortable and emotionally safe around women for many years afterward. And so I sat down one morning, and I wrote this article, and I still remember the moment of pressing send to the New York Times. I can't believe I did it, but I did, and it did. And it apparently resonated with many and also really struck a chord with many in a negative way as well.
And what do you think was so powerful in the way it resonated with people to engender the response that it got and then inspire you to write The Twisted Sisterhood?
Well, I'll tell you, I think I was very surprised. I really thought that I was alone with these feelings. You know, you look around, you see women having these wonderful friendships, which I had as well in my life. And yet I think that it's sort of this kind of thing a lot of people don't like to talk about, you know, the sort of power and influence women do have over one another. We talk about the good parts, but not so much the bad. You know, it makes us feel anti-woman or odd girl out to acknowledge the dirty laundry, so to speak. And so, you know, I understand why that is difficult. We don't like holding up the mirror to the darkness necessarily, but sometimes with the human condition, I think it's necessary. And so it was very surprising for me to hear from hundreds of women reaching out and saying, you know, I've had these anxieties, you know, for years or decades even, or maybe it just started last week, you know, having issues with colleagues or their own daughters and with having struggles with their peers. But it was resonating with women from all across the United States. And it really made me think, wow, I'm not alone. So that part felt good.
And the thing that is broader about this, oftentimes when we hear these kinds of conversations and the impact of high school or college experience, it's often attributed to the so-called mean girls. What you're writing about is a much broader phenomenon.
Right. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, it's been a little difficult. You know, I understand why the media likes to spin it as a mean girl or catfighty. It's salacious. It's sort of, it gets people thinking and going. But it's a more serious issue than that, and that's what this book is about. You know, there's an underexplored aspect of this. We've paid a lot of lip service to the behaviors themselves. I think we've already diagnosed the problem. We know the types of behaviors that go on, whether we're talking about, you know, things happening in the sandbox among girls, in sorority houses, at girls' summer camp, or with mommy judging, or what is going on, you know, with workplace sabotage, which is a huge issue among women right now. But we don't stop and think about the consequences, the fallout. What is this really doing to real, live human beings in the short term and the long?
And, of course, when it happens at the high school and college level, because the vulnerability is so much higher, that's when you see these situations not unlike the story you wrote about, where it has life-changing capability.
Absolutely. I mean, we all have, as I say, our mileage varies. I mean, women are very complex. We have different levels of sensitivity, resilience. We've had different experiences. But the truth is, you know, our nudges and slights and these overt cruelties and the thoughtlessness that we sometimes, you know, engage in, it really does impact people, and you know, it's been in the news a great deal, and I guess that's the silver lining. I mean, you hate to see things like a bullying-related suicide be the type of triggering event that gets people reflecting and really thinking about their own behaviors, but it actually was one of the reasons I ended up writing this book when I had had great ambivalence about really pursuing it. I had a friend whose niece committed suicide in the wake of Facebook harassment by her girlfriends, and it was that kind of thing that I just thought, you know, it's got to stop. I've got three daughters. People aren't talking about this enough and realizing the impact. So
one of the other things is that much of the response that you got to the New York Times piece that we talked about was from women who were angry at you for kind of airing this dirty laundry, for being kind of acting betraying women.
Right, and that was difficult because in the context of that criticism, there were so many misunderstandings and actually a lot of personal judgments that really weren't fair, I think, and weren't applicable to me. And I guess because I'd like to think of myself as a hardy gal, I litigated for many years. But the blogosphere is a pretty toxic place, and it was tough. I didn't like it. And I think, you know, it came from all walks. It was Jezebel, the website Jezebel. There were people piling on there. There were some second wave feminists that were unhappy with me. There were some sorority girls, I guess there were a few of those. But, I mean, everyone has their different take. When you write about women, it is inherently emotionally delicate stuff. And I think there's really not a lot of in-between. I think you feel strongly about it one way or the other, and I recognize that.
And in the criticism, what were you hearing? What were women saying, those that were critical?
Some things I can't repeat on radio. we could start there. Everything from, you know, you're obviously a bad mother, you have post-traumatic stress disorder, and certainly the large part of it was that, you know, I cannot believe that you're not blaming men for all of this, because all of this can be traced back to men and cultural influences that's causing the infighting. That was a big part of it. And, you know, my response to that is exactly, I mean, I would never deny that sexism exists and so forth. And that's not what I'm saying. I just think along with that bullhorn and all of the other battles that we have out there, it's still fair to hold up the mirror and clean our own house as well, because the truth is women are demoralizing each other and demotivating and holding one another back and dealing hits to self-confidence right along with others, you know, and I think it's fair to really talk about that.
Is this in your view, a relatively contemporary phenomenon? Is this something that corresponds to the rise of feminism, or has this been something that has been ingrained in the culture far longer than that?
Well, for a long time I got lost in all of those theories because it's pretty fascinating, and I think most people would agree that there's an evolutionary component to this, that maybe since the days we were in the caves and out in the wild that, you know, we still had this sort of competitive thing going on and so forth. I do think I would never blame feminism. I think that's sad. I think some women, you know, I did hear from a segment of my survey. I conducted a survey with 3,000 women, and some people took that perspective that, you know, we're trying to have it all now, and that's pitting, you know, ourselves against each other. But I think very few of us would want to go back and not enjoy, you know, what we have now. I mean, my nest came really nicely feathered when I was born. I was not out there having to fight for some of the rights that we have now. On the other hand, again, I think it's too simple to have a black and white perspective and say that it all relates back to cultural influences and the patriarchy and so forth.
So if you knock those things out, where do you find the roots of this?
Well, I think most people would agree, you know, if you're going to knock those things out, I think most people would agree it just relates back to our insecurities. And, you know, unfortunately, and that's why I think a huge component in this is really growing girls who are very confident and who look for their value and worthiness from within and are not looking at what the marketers and the media are telling them is worthy and valuable and how they have to be and you have to be perfect. I mean, I think it's For women and girls, I think it's very difficult. I mean, we are responding to that in many ways, and it does feed the beast, you know, when you're feeling insecure, and that drives some of the ugliness when you're doing the status jockeying and the one-upsmanship and the constant comparing and so forth. The happiest people I know are people who are content within themselves and, you know, there's always someone who's more fabulous out there than you are. and the sooner you can accept that, I think the better off you're going to be.
One of the other aspects of this that you write about is the importance of the power of memory, how we take these experiences and process them over time to the degree that sometimes our memory of them is or the memory is inconsistent with the event, but far more powerful in some cases.
Oh, right. I mean, I'm certainly no neuroscientist, but it's really a fascinating area, and I think they're only scratching the surface. But, you know, the area of your brain that encodes emotional memories, you know, they say it's very quick to learn and slow to forget. And when you have, it doesn't have to be a traumatic queen bee watershed moment in your life, but when you have things that hurt you emotionally, those things can literally stay etched in your brain to the day you die. I mean, that is the common wisdom among the neuroscientists that deal with emotions and memory. And I think it's just sort of interesting, not as an excuse to say, oh, gee, that's why you're socially deviant or something, but it's interesting to think that, yeah, you know, something that happened to you in even junior high or, you know, it's amazing to hear the stories from women that will tell you they can remember the day of the week, what people were wearing, what the girls were wearing that picked on them, what it smelled like in the air, and it can come back to them, you know, and that may... I heard from a lot of women who said, you know, I had never really linked past and present, and now I realize maybe that's why I get along with men better, or maybe that's why I avoid, you know, book groups and PTA and that kind of thing, because I just don't feel safe, and I never really thought about it. But I heard numerous stories of that kind of thing.
Were there those women in the survey that had had those experiences, that had been less scarred, less impacted by it, And what can you learn from how they got through it?
Well, there's just a range, once again, of women. I mean, I think someone, you know, whenever you do a survey, you're going to be accused of sort of, you know, survey sample bias and so forth. But I have to tell you, I mean, out of these 3,000 women, within the first 2 weeks, I'd heard from 1,000 women. And that's not enough time, you know, to sort of weed out all the normal people and only have bitter loner women who are responding. This was a very... very thoughtful group when you read through their commentary. And, you know, I think a lot of women have picked themselves up, you know. You deal with something, and even if you've kind of pushed it under the rug, you know, most of these women have gone on and achieved success in various fronts in their lives. And, you know, they tuck it away. And hopefully they find the kinds of women and friendships that can open themselves, you know, back up to that idea of having intimacy, because it's so important. Women are so good for one another when things are, you know, running smoothly and healthy.
Yet there's this huge number, in the survey at least, that still feel that there's a meanness and negativity that just is an undercurrent there.
Yeah, and that's pretty demoralizing. You know, again, for me, it's not a numbers game, but the fact is, I never hold myself out as a scientist or anything like that. But I, even if I gave you a margin of error of 40%, it wouldn't matter. This is a whole lot of women who are saying they're feeling ambivalent, less emotionally safe, and operating from a more defensive posture in a way because of what they've seen or experienced out there with other girls and women. And to me, that's what we need to think about, you know, and not discount or invalidate their experiences, because there are a lot of women out there feeling this. And, you know, feeling when you offer them an anonymous survey, they're going to tell you these things. They're going to write, and that's exactly what happened.
And isn't that the delicate balance between, on the one hand, not discounting or not validating the experience, but really trying to move beyond it on the other?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and that's something I think most women have been very adept at doing, but they're also interested in the subject matter because maybe they have a daughter, you know, whose peers are excluding them, and they're having to deal with it, even if they had healthy relationships their entire lives, you know, they're having to deal with that. Or maybe it explains the behavior of their mother or sister or their neighbor or a colleague, you know, someone who seems a little socially, you know, unsure or, you know, whatever. But I do think, yeah, that most people really do try to work through this. But it can be a process. It can be a struggle. I mean, I feel that I'm a pretty, I've picked myself up. I've done pretty well, and I've had friendships and so forth, but maybe not at the level of intimacy that is as rewarding as it could have been until, you know, maybe even through this project, it's really helped me a lot.
Is there a point that you found in the women that you've talked to or the ones in this survey that kind of age out of this, that there's a certain point that you do move beyond this?
Well, that's a great point. And again, can't generalize all women, but I have a chapter in the book that deals with this. And, you know, I found myself almost envying some of these women that were, you know, maybe in their 60s, 70s even, that said, you know, it gets better with age. I just feel more secure in myself, and I don't really care what other people think about me, and I don't, you know, I know how to choose my friends more wisely now, and I don't have time, and I can't be bothered with the toxic people in my life. And you don't always have that luxury when you're younger, you know, whether you're talking about, you know, people that you're working with or other mothers in your neighborhood or whatever. I mean, you still have to sort of find your way. And I think there's something to that. As you get older, there comes wisdom.
What about the mother-daughter relationship and the way this exists sometimes in cycles?
I think the mother-daughter relationship is key, and that was an overwhelming bit of feedback that I got from women, even women that didn't have daughters, that they really believe that their own mothers helped shape their approach to other women and whether they were, you know, inclined to be aggressive types or not. You know, our girls learn by example. I must have heard, you know, so many variations, hundreds of women saying things, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And I believe that. I mean, I think, as I've said in the book, you know, if you are engaging in the kind of behaviors, whether it's two-faced, you know, behavior or gossiping especially and judging and that type of thing in front of your daughters, and, you know, they see that. It seeps right on through. They don't miss it, you know, and that does teach them very powerfully, you know, that the world can work that way and that, you know, you can actually reap social rewards that way. And there's, you know, you may change the way you're going to behave in later life, but there's also a pretty strong likelihood that you'll believe it's at least a valid way of relating. And that's, you know, that's just something we need to work on. And I think mothers really need to call out their daughters, too, and pay closer attention if they're not already. I mean, I'm not here to judge. I think parenting is a very hard job. I have 4 children, 3 daughters, and I, you know, I'm struggling every day just like anybody else. But, you know, I mean, I think paying attention to what they're saying on Facebook and texting, and if they're excluding, you know, you don't let them get away with mean girling somebody. It's not right. You got to step in.
Is there, from a cultural anthropology point of view, is there a tribal aspect to this that we better need to understand?
Oh, I think so. I think there is a lot more work to be done on that front. It's fascinating. I think most of us are familiar with Lord of the Flies, and in my situation, you know, sure. I mean, I call it the estrogen-laced Lord of the Flies mentality, and it's funny, you know. I really don't feel bitter about it because I recognize that, especially in your clueless youth, you know, you're looking for an identity, and that can tee things up for trouble. You know, it's just that exclusivity of the group, and it's, you know, premised on sort of being a have, not a have not, and excluding and making others feel awful. And, you know, groups can be wonderful too, don't get me wrong, but it's when it's got that sort of exclusive nature that it can be a big problem, and it feeds on each other, on itself. You know, I mean, if you're sitting in a park and one woman dangles some kind of criticism about someone who's not there, and then someone else jumps in, and then suddenly you've got this pack mentality. I mean, you see that kind of thing often, and I certainly heard a lot about groups. A lot of women out there do not feel comfortable in groups.
And what impact does that have on women's ability to gather in groups and do work, whatever it might be?
Well, I think it's a mixed bag. I think some people avoid them outright. I certainly heard that. I think some people have learned to sort of glide through these affairs with a detached, sort of superficial air. You know, we see a lot of that. I heard a lot from women about holding others at arm's length and, you know, playing it close to the vest, not really sure, you know, I kept hearing the word audition and caution, those types of things, before they'll reveal any, you know, intimate information with other people. You really have to prove yourself. And to me, that signaled a marked difference and departure from the way we thought women would relate, which is, you know, this open, hospitable, and nurturing sort of climate. And again, that's part of that that fallout, not just for individuals, but for the greater gender. I mean, at some point, that affects all of us. And so that's what I mean when I say in my book that we're all implicated. I mean, even if you're not out there actively being aggressive or hostile or thoughtless or careless or so forth, I think that it still makes sense to pay attention to what's going on within the greater gender, because a lot of people are having these issues in their lives.
And what is your sense of how men view this from afar?
Oh, I have a very solid sense how some view it, because it's been very interesting. I've heard from a great many men, and I guess that surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have your stereotypes and so forth. Not me personally, but I mean, I think some people have this idea that, you know, men are just off drooling in the corner and enjoying watching women catfight, and that's not my experience. I'm hearing from a lot of very thoughtful men who maybe some have daughters, who, in fact, I was surprised on Amazon, I've got male reviewers, you know, that are saying, this is important stuff. I'm raising two girls. I'm concerned about this. It needs to be talked about. I see this all the time. I see it with my wife and her friends. I want it to stop. There's been a lot of commentary online in response to some interviews that I've done. And it tends to be pretty thoughtful, actually. You know, like, hey, come on, ladies, get it together. You know, you're better than this.
Mm-hmm. And to the extent that it is not going to stop necessarily, do you see it changing in any way, morphing into something else?
Well, that's an interesting question, too. I mean, you know, I wrote this book. I don't look at it as sort of hokey pie-in-the-sky idealism, although it's certainly a lofty goal to think that you could play a part in engineering some social change for the better. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have written if I didn't believe that we could do it. I mean, if enough people really resolve to practice a more mindful civility, and that's a big topic. I mean, Whoopi Goldberg just wrote about deteriorating civility, and a lot of people are talking about that. You know, there's an element of social contagion here. You know, when I'm around somebody who does not engage in the gossip and the rest of it, it makes me want to be a better person, too, and not do it. And there is scientific evidence that can spread, truly. So, you know, I, again, I'm not a hokey gal. I was a litigator for a long time. But I really believe when you pay attention and you really hear about how people are feeling on the inside about these things, you sort of feel a responsibility maybe to, I don't know, do your part and tend to your own little plot in the female garden.
The other side of it, maybe the more negative side, is that it is a kind of tribalism. And that in a society with so much pressure and so much going on, where people are desperately clinging to try and be with people that they think are more are like them, that tribalism is on the rise, not the other way around.
Well, and that's fascinating. I mean, that is something that I talk about in the book, that we're sort of bunkering down in our close, exclusive clusters of known commodity girlfriends that we already feel safe with, and we're sort of shutting out the rest. And
it's our own little gated communities.
Well, exactly, and I think it is sort of unfortunate, especially because that's not really the way, you know, certainly women have evolved, but all of humanity. We have evolved to be connected, collaborative, and cooperative beings, and there is vast research that talks about, you know, the price of loneliness and isolation and that kind of thing. And yes, you may, you know, just enjoy a few friends here and there, but there is also all sorts of research. It's in the first chapter of my book that actually will point to having more beds at the inn and actually having more of those intimate connections in your life can help you lead a qualitatively better life, healthier life.
And that's the irony at the end of all of this, perhaps, that connected and collaborative is the way of the future, but the fear that we're all experiencing now is leading us precisely in the other direction.
Yeah, it's something, again, I just hope to raise some awareness about. I certainly cannot, you know, tie a neat and tidy Hallmark bow on all of this and send everyone on their merry way, but I really do think that the more we can trigger some, you know, reflection and some dialogues, renewed dialogues about this, it can't be a bad thing, right?
Kelly Vallon, the book is The Twisted Sisterhood, Unraveling the Dark Legacy of Female Friendships. Kelly, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Really appreciate the chance to talk.